This is the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. A look inside the sweet science with Chris Mannix.
I will be always remembered as a winner.
Interviews.
Free and Freddie Roach, Hall of Fame trainer.
Analysis.
That is the thing Floyd's talking about right now.
And everything going on in the world of boxing.
I would have liked him to get to the bell to see what was what.
Post a rating or leave a comment on iTunes.
He smells bad.
About the podcast.
Oh.
And now a man who several people would like to punch in the face repeatedly. Chris Mannix.
Hi, welcome into another episode of the Yahoo Sports Boxing Podcast. Glad you could join me this week, and we have a terrific show lined up for you. First up is Keith Idek, the great writer over at BoxingScene.com. Keith and I talk about a whole bunch of the news in boxing. The PBC and Fox deal. Maybe some cracks in the deal for Fury and Wilder. Is there a deal for Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder? We get the Garcia-Porter fight coming up on Saturday. Plus, Manny Pacquiao is still a boxing free agent. I get into that and more with Keith Idek. A little bit later on, Danny Garcia, the former welterweight champion, he joins me. We sit down in advance of his showdown against Sean Porter. We talk about Garcia coming back after a long layoff earlier this year, getting back to the top in the welterweight division. All that and more with Danny Garcia. Quick housekeeping note, if you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes. Post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me this week on the podcast, back a familiar voice that you've heard here before, Keith Idek, senior boxing writer over at BoxingScene.com. What's up, Keith?
Hey, Chris, thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for coming back in, man. Always appreciate having you here, and it's a good time to have you here because there's a lot going on, especially in the broadcast world. And I want to begin there because this week Fox announced a new four-year agreement with Al Haymon's Premier Boxing Champions as part of the deal. PBC will have 10 dates on Fox, another 12 on FS1. There will also be shoulder programming that will contribute to 175 hours of PBC content each year. Last month, Showtime announced that it was continuing its partnership with PBC with a new three-year deal. In 2018, Showtime says they will show a total of 30 cards on the network, most of which are in partnership with PBC. These, Keith, these are a lot of dates. And this is a lot of programming to fill for the PBC and for Al Haymon. What was your first reaction to this Fox deal?
Well, it's great for the fighters. You know, there's more money available from these license fees. If the Wall Street Journal story is accurate, there might be more than $50 million available in license fees. For the fighters, it's fantastic. There's more money available. The problem for PBC fighters previously was that there wasn't enough activity for some of them. I think some of them are okay with the activity levels that they fight at, but there's more dates available. There's more money. So for the fighters, there's nothing wrong with it at all. It's great for business.
One of my initial reactions as well. You coupled the Fox money, $50 million, $60 million, whatever it is, with whatever Showtime's budget is, which is probably comparable, do you think? Is it around there?
I would think so, yeah. I don't know the exact figure, but I would think.
Yeah, around the line. So now you look at a $100 million pot for a stable of fighters, most of which will go to the top end guys in some of the bigger fights. Maybe we will get more consistent, bigger fights. But my reaction was similar to when the first round of PBC deals were announced, the time buy stuff was announced, because that was a lot of money on the table as well. There's a big pot of money for fighters then. And what did we get out of it? We got a handful of good fights, but by and large, when it came to the time buy stuff, we got far too many one-sided A versus C, B versus D type of fights. And that's what worries me. I mean, PBC's got a huge stable. It's like 150, 160, whatever it is, number of fighters. But the top-end guys, my concern is that we're still not going to get their top-end guys against other top-end guys on a consistent basis. Is that a valid concern, do you think?
I think that is a valid concern, Chris, because while they do have a deep stable, I think you'll have Showtime in the divisions that Showtime is invested in. They'll continue to work with those fighters because they're not going to give those guys away without a fight, obviously. The welterweight division, they've invested a lot of money into, you know, Errol Spence and Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia and Sean Porter, who will fight this weekend. You know, so Deontay Wilder, obviously, who seems headed for a Showtime pay-per-view fight. But I think that it's going to be difficult. But I think you'll get a lot of fights with maybe guys who are on the back ends of their careers, but could be an interesting fight. A perfect example is Victor Ortiz against John Molina, which is a fight that's coming up on September 30th. Now, they're both way past their primes. They have a bunch of losses apiece. But I think if you put those two guys together, you can have an entertaining fight. I think we'll see some of those fights where they'll fight for decent amounts of money And you'll get entertaining fights, but not necessarily A guys against A guys.
I'm completely fine with a fight like that. What I don't want to see is Victor Ortiz, Errol Spence, when there are other... But you know what I mean?
No, like, absolutely. I don't think anyone wants to see that.
But we could get... I fear that we're going to get a bunch of those. And one of my fears comes from... I don't know who's doing the programming at Fox. I don't know who's in charge of signing off on these fights. At Showtime, you've got people that are experienced with boxing, right?
Sure.
Like that know a good fight when they see it and know what a good fight is worth. I don't know if they have that at Fox. They've been basically a time buy, you know, up until this point, which has been, you know, just taking the money and accepting largely whatever fights that Al Haymon and his company are willing to put on. I hope there's going to be somebody in charge that can say, look, we're not giving you $3 million for this awful fight. If there is that, I think it has potential. But if it's just continuing to accept whatever Al is willing to put on there, I have my concerns about it.
It's a very different dynamic, Chris, in the sense, as you said before, they were paying for the right to be on the network, right? So you get what you get, sort of. They're filling time on the network. The network doesn't have much say. I think there will be people in place that say, you know, for quality control purposes, that will get the type of matchups that they feel is worthwhile for whatever they're paying for fight X or fight Y. You're right, though. At Showtime, Stephen Espinosa has done a fantastic job, I think, especially more recently, of getting quality matchups for the millions of dollars they're investing in the sport. You know, of course, when you have a triple header, you might have one fight that's not great. You know, it's showcasing one fighter, but, you know, over a guy who he clearly is going to beat. But you don't have three fights like that in a particular broadcast. And I think the people at Fox will do a solid job. You know, we just have to give them a chance in the beginning. If we're 6 months into it and we're seeing one mismatch after another, well, then there'll be, you know, cause for criticism. But as of right now, I think they're going to be paying a lot of money for these fights. So mm-hmm. I think they're going to want some quality in return.
The other question I have, and I'm sure it's one that Showtime has, is who gets what fighter? I mean, we know, and Stephen Espinosa has been on this podcast. He's talked to you about it as well. He doesn't like guys bouncing back and forth from different networks. If a guy's a Showtime fighter, he wants them fighting on Showtime. Now, granted, because of the stable that Al has, Showtime alone, you know, can't keep putting on all his fighters. That's been a problem for the PBC in recent years as these time buys have started to go away. As NBC ran away from it, as ESPN ran away from it, all of a sudden you've got guys, top-level guys, fighting only once a year. So in that sense, it should be a positive. But how do you think they separate who goes on what network? Is it like, all right, you get X weight class, we get Y weight class? You know, Espinosa and Showtime have done a great job of building Deontay Wilder up until this point. Do they lose him and have him become a Fox fighter? How do you think that works?
Well, you'd love to see Deontay Wilder on Fox, and a couple of his fights have been on Fox. Mm-hmm. When he fought Gerald Washington, Chris Areola, guys like that. Those fights have been on national television. That's a great platform for him. But for him in particular, Chris, I think his next fight against Tyson Fury was going to be a Showtime pay-per-view fight. And if everyone gets what they want, which who knows at this point, the next fight against Anthony Joshua also would be a pay-per-view fight. So I take him out of the mix just temporarily mm-hmm. for those two reasons. But you're right. Showtime's invested heavily in the welterweight division, for example, like I said before. So if you put Errol Spence on the network and you pay a $3 million license fee and Errol Spence winds up getting between $2 and $3 million, you don't want his next fight to be on Fox. If Fox owned Showtime, that would be different, but CBS owned Showtime. So I still can't figure out why they haven't put another fight on CBS after Keith Thurman and Danny Garcia did over 5 million viewers. That perplexes me still to this day, but they haven't done another fight on CBS since then. But so there is going to be some back and forth, and I think there's going to have to be some compromise and some give and take. But the featherweight division is another division that Showtime is invested in. So are they going to let Leo Santa Cruz go fight Gary Russell on Fox? I don't think so, not without a fight.
This was the negotiations for this deal were protracted. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth, and one of the points of contention that I was told about the Fox side was that they want exclusivity with the PBC fighters. Now, obviously, they didn't get it. Showtime's got a new deal with them there. But I wonder if both sides go in saying, all right, well, we get the top-level guys. No, we get the top-level guys. I wonder how it's going to work. I mean, I know internally at Showtime, they're saying, like, look, this is a good thing for us. We can't, you know, put on this many fighters. It's going to help us in the long term. But what happens if there's a tug of war over an Errol Spence, who right now is a really good fighter, a guy that does decent ratings, but is not a pay-per-view level fighter yet. Similarly, look, all those guys at the welterweight level are not really pay-per-view fighters that they have yet. Thurman, Garcia, Porter, they're not that kind of guy. I just wonder how it all kind of shakes out there.
You know, the other interesting thing from a broadcasting perspective, Chris, is that they're trying to build an audience. So very similar to putting, you know, I'll take Showtime, for example, the Shameless is a show that's done very well ratings-wise for them. It's been on for eight years or whatever.
You watch regular watcher?
I watch it. Maybe jump the shark a little bit, but I still watch it. But, okay. You know, when you watch Shameless and you know the characters and everything, so kind of look at boxing in the same way. You know Errol Spence is going to fight three times a year, or hopefully will fight three times a year. You can watch him in January, in July, in December if he's not in a pay-per-view fight. So I think there's some of that to it, especially from the broadcaster's perspective, because Fox obviously does the same thing on the broadcast network. They have shows that people are invested in. They start to know, look at the fighters as characters in a sense that people will grow attached to and want to see fight, you know, every few months.
One of the problems, though, that the PBC created for itself was that a lot of their guys feel entitled now to good money for bad fights. What the PBC never did during their time by series was create tiers for fights. It was, you know, X million for fighter A, X million to fight fighter B, X million to fight fighter C. You know, and Angel Garcia kind of alluded to this once. I remember listening to him talk about it where he said something along the lines of, if you're going to pay me $1 million to fight, you know, a crappy fighter, and pay me $1 million to fight a really good fighter, I'm taking the $1 million to fight the crappy fighter. You know, basically something along those lines. So I do wonder if a guy like, you know, you mentioned Errol Spence, does Errol Spence go into it like into 2019, and let's say he doesn't fight Mikey Garcia, but goes into 2019 and says, all right, well, I'll fight one big fight and two lesser fights, and I want the same money for all of them. Like, are they going to accept that? I mean, they're going to be able to pull off a system where they're not making the top end money to fight lower end guys. Are they going to continue to expect high level money to fight low level fights?
In the case of Errol Spence, it comes down to ultimately how much do you want to keep Errol Spence?
Yeah.
And they want to keep Errol Spence very badly because he's one of the top, you know, four or five fighters in the world probably right now. And you want to keep him in line to fight Terrence Crawford at some point, which is they're going to have to do business with Bob Arum and ESPN to do a joint venture for that fight. But for a guy like him, I think he's going to be, within reason, he'll be able to demand what he wants because they want to keep him. And I think in the past, when the license fee hasn't quite met what Errol Spence wanted, Al Haymon paid him a little bit more out of his own coffers to make him happy. And that's what happened earlier this year when he fought Lamont Peterson.
Yeah. You mentioned Errol Spence, and one of the things about this whole, you know, break down to basically three leagues out there, plus HBO, whatever they're doing, is that I think it makes it incredibly difficult, or even more difficult now, to make fights across the street. It was already extraordinarily tough, but I mean, I feel like this new deal makes it even tougher to see Errol Spence versus any of the top guys associated with PBC. Unless, look, when I talk to people on the top ranked side, they say, well, you know, these are probably going to be pay-per-views. Are they? Like, who's buying Spence versus Crawford the next 2 years? I don't know.
For better or worse, they will be pay-per-views, Chris, because you know how this business works. I mean, that they're going to be pay-per-view fights. Now, maybe at that point, they're only the type of pay-per-view fights that do 400 or 500,000 buys, which is not good based on what the top-level fight now, you know, Canelo against Triple G will do. It pales in comparison. But in order to build pay-per-view stars, which is where, from the fighter's perspective, the real money is, they're going to try to do those types of fights on pay-per-view. Now, is Errol Spence against Keith Thurman a pay-per-view fight? I would say no. But again, do they test the waters to try to do that? Or do they go back to CBS because they did sensationally with the Danny Garcia-Keith Thurman fight? Over 5 million people watched that fight, and no general sports fan knows Keith Thurman or Danny Garcia, but they got a tremendous audience for that and never went back. You know, Errol Spence had the built-in audience from the Olympics, but they did over 6 million viewers for that fight. So Errol Spence has a track record on, you know, free television that might make you bring him back to that platform.
The 6 million he did, I put an asterisk on that.
That's what I'm saying. He had the built-in audience. Yeah, I fully agree.
Was that the gold medal game, like the gold medal basketball game?
But it was a smart thing for Al Haymon and PBC
absolutely.
To do. Because now they can, whether it's manufactured or you know, not legitimate or whatever, they can still say that Errol Spence fought someone no one's ever heard of. Well, no one probably had ever heard of Errol Spence at that point. And they did over 6 million viewers. No one else in boxing can say that.
Yeah. I am curious to see how this works out because, I mean, look, I don't know how many people, how many networks, businesses, whatever, have made deals with Al Haymon and come away with it saying, what a great deal. What a great experience that I just had there. I mean, HBO, it didn't end well there. Look, I don't know all the finances about how Al got all his money from Waddell and Reed and the financial backing there, but that money's all gone. That's tens, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars that's gone. NBC was getting paid for it, and they wanted nothing to do with it. ESPN was getting paid for it, and they want nothing to do with it. Now, you know, you have to call it a victory for Al and the PBC to get Fox to come on board with all this, but I mean, there are a lot of people out there that joined up with the PBC and with Al that came away with it with just bad experiences, sour experiences.
Maybe from a broadcasting perspective to some degree, but if you're not paying for the content, what do you care, right? If it was 3 million viewers or 4 million viewers or 2.
But they had dates on NBC that they couldn't even fill at the end. Like, I don't know exactly what happened there at the end, but right. NBC was scheduled to put some fights on, was at the end of last year, and then they just disappeared. Like, it was just all gone.
Yeah, you know, from the fighter's perspective, Chris, they've been paid well. You know, most fighters, the inactivity has been an issue for some guys, but a lot of guys don't mind. Danny Garcia is a perfect example. Danny Garcia is perfectly fine with fighting twice a year. Mm-hmm. He has said that repeatedly. The training camps are very hard. He's a 30-year-old guy now, and he's being paid handsomely for these fights. When he fought Keith Thurman, he made over $2 million. So he's fine with not coming back until the following February. It was almost a year between his fights. And now he comes back in September. If you look at his fights against Keith Thurman, Brandon Rios, and Sean Porter, he'll make somewhere around $5 million. And this is not a guy who's a transcendent star or anything like that. $5 million is a lot of money. I mean, it sets up his family for a while, and he's always been paid well. So I think if you ask guys like him, Sean Porter is another example. I mean, a lot of these guys have made a lot of money. The guys on the lower end who aren't making as much money and aren't active would probably complain more than those type of top-tier guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, I hope it works. Being on a broadcast platform like Fox can only be good for boxing if good fights get put on there. If it's, I mean, you mentioned Wilder, you know, he fought two largely one-sided fights on Fox, and that I don't know how that helps anybody. I don't know how that helps build a profile. You know, we need to see, like we saw Thurman versus Porter on CBS, we need to see, you know, Spence versus Thurman, Spence versus Garcia, or whoever comes out of this fight this Saturday. We need to see those fights on Fox to maximize the exposure. That only that can help, you know, pull, as we always talk about, pulling boxing out of the fringes. Like, that's what has to happen. So we'll see. It's another big deal, another network getting involved heavily into boxing. All right, last month, in a dramatic in-ring face-off, it was announced that Tyson Fury, the undefeated lineal heavyweight champion, will challenge Deontay Wilder, the reigning WBC heavyweight champion. Since then, Keith, we have seen videos of Fury and Wilder purportedly training. They've been on social media, but no formal announcement yet, no press conference, no date, and no official venue. Do you think Wilder Fury is in any trouble?
I don't. The last I was told, it was, and I don't know why it would be 80% done, because it seemed 100% done the 2 or 3 weeks ago. But you know, maybe there's some I's to be dotted and some T's to be crossed. But I think that we'll get an announcement after the Triple G Canelo rematch. They'll let, you know, all the attention go to that for now. They'll make the announcement. As from what I've been led to believe, the fight is going to be November 17th in Las Vegas. There was a December 1st date that they were looking at, but they don't want to go head-to-head with a Vasily Lomachenko fight on ESPN. You know, you're trying to maximize the pay-per-view dollars. You don't want to have another boxing match to go against. And the closer they got toward Christmas, they weren't crazy about that idea because they thought it would affect the pay-per-view business. So my best guess is it's going to be November 17th somewhere in Las Vegas. Barclays Center was in the mix, and rightfully so, because they've done some Deontay Wilder fights and they've done good crowds for those fights. But it looks now like the fight will be in Las Vegas. I had heard rumors that Tyson Fury was having second thoughts. I just don't know why he would have second thoughts. He's going to make eight figures for this fight. He, in his mind, thinks he's going to win the fight. You know, he's not looking at it like he's going to go in there and get knocked out by Deontay Wilder. He looks at it like he's going to beat Deontay Wilder, make the fight between him and Anthony Joshua even bigger, not the fight between Anthony Joshua and Deontay Wilder bigger. So, you know, maybe he's trying to squeeze a little bit more money out of Frank Warren or the other side. That could be happening right now. But I do think that the fight will happen.
Yeah, I've heard mixed things as well. I think, you know, the people at Showtime are moving ahead like the fight is happening. They're putting together press tour proposals, things that networks do to prepare for a fight. Speaking to somebody close to Deontay Wilder recently, he's in camp and working towards, you know, getting ready for that fight. But those are the things that I expected to be true. What I don't know is what's going through the mind of Tyson Fury right now and what is being told to Tyson Fury right now. One of the things I wonder about, Keith, is are people around Matchroom trying to make an end run around Frank Warren? Are they trying to either to Tyson Fury or to, you know, MTK, the management team for Tyson Fury, are they trying to tell him, you know, don't take this fight, wait till after September, take a lesser fight, and then, you know, we'll see what happens with a Joshua fight in April. There'll be even more money on the table. You're right, Tyson Fury thinks he's going to win, and he thinks it's going to make a fight with Joshua even bigger. But I wonder if, I'm wondering because I'm hearing some of this, are people trying to get to Tyson Fury to get him to, you know, take a lesser fight and then see, you know, who the highest bidder is? By the way, I think that's probably a good strategy for Tyson Fury. Like, wait until October 1st or September 23rd and take the fight from the highest bidder, whether it's Joshua, whether it's Deontay Wilder. If you have two fighters that are basically bidding for you, I would think that's a savvier way to go financially, no?
He's in a great bargaining position. The only thing is, I guess he would wonder whether he could trust the people from the other side.
Yeah.
Are they going to string him along and say, okay, you can fight Anthony Joshua on April 13th if you just wait. And then September 23rd rolls around and that doesn't, you know, and it gets too late to do the Deontay Wilder fight on the date that they want to do it. And then he's kind of left hanging with neither fight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a terrible position for him to be in. So I just wonder if there's a lot of trust on, because, you know, Frank Warren and Eddie Hearn have this adversarial relationship.
You're talking about their buddies, Saunders Andrade. Let's go.
And I don't doubt that Eddie would try to do that, because that fight is an enormous event in the UK. I mean, think about how, but with Tyson Fury saying all the crazy things that he's going to say, I mean, that fight would, you know, 90,000 probably isn't enough seats,
yeah,
to, you know, for that fight in the UK. So I would get it from that perspective.
That might be the biggest stadium fight, and I hate to say this, somebody's going to tweet at me like, no, this fight was bigger in a stadium, but I think it's the biggest stadium fight in British boxing history, like Fury versus
Joshua. I would think,
Joshua,
right? I mean, yeah, I don't know if, I don't think there's a venue that could hold more than 90,000, and they jammed as many people in Wembley as they could for the Klitschko fight, so I could see that happening, them making a run at Tyson Fury, but, you know, he's, all the stuff that he said over the last month and a half leads you to believe that he's going to fight Deontay Wilder, and then what would his explanation be? If he does, for whatever reason, and whichever fight he would take next, if he doesn't fight Deontay Wilder,
fake injury, you know,
he could. Yeah, he could. And look, pull. I mean, the guy's had a lot of personal issues. They could very easily point to that type of thing. So there are ways for him to be out of it if the deal isn't finalized. I think the fight's going to move forward, but, you know, boxing's a dirty business. So who knows what they'll be able to pull off?
All right. So give me a percentage confidence that Fury Wilder happens in November.
I'll go with 80%, because that's where I was told that the that seems like a safe number,
when
right?
Somebody
that
says
leaves
that,
yourself some wiggle room that if it doesn't happen.
I,
you know?
I get this more in basketball, though. When somebody says stuff like that, I'm like, so it's more like 80% not done, right? Like, that 20% tends to loom huge with something like that.
Chris, wasn't it weird, though, that it was kind of, like you said, it was a dramatic thing in the ring. I didn't find it all that dramatic. I found it kind of anticlimactic, like they were kind of winking at each other. Like,
oh, he was goofy.
You know, yeah. I mean, they seem to like each
they
other,
do
and
like
I think
each
they
other,
respect each other, and they know this is a business, and they're going to, I think they, in the discussions that they've had privately, Tyson Fury probably said, hey, look, I'm going to say all this crazy stuff about you, and, you know, don't pay it any mind. It's all part of the show. Let's go make a ton of money together.
Well, you know, saw the fake, in the hotel lobby.
Sure.
Like, where at the end of it, they're both laughing.
They couldn't
like,
even hold
just,
back from, I mean,
they're both just laughing.
You know, they're going to go in there and they're going to try to beat the, well, Wilder's definitely going to be aggressive. You know, maybe Tyson Fury will box more, but they're, you know, they both want to win. It would vault them into a different position in their career. So I don't doubt that the fight itself will be very competitive and that they'll go after each other. But the rest of it is all just part of the show. We all know that. I mean, come on. You know, that sometimes these guys hate each other, right? Mm-hmm. Like now it seems like Gennady Golovkin and Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah.
You know, that they really dislike each other. But oftentimes, that's not really the case.
No, it's not. I'm going to go with 75%, close to yours. I think it's going to happen, but I wonder as we get closer, if we get past, put it this way, if we get past Canelo Golovkin and we're at Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, no announcement, then my concern will go even higher.
Right. Well, the thing is, for a pay-per-view fight, I don't know how true this is, but you know, they've always told us, Mark Taffet always told me, you need 3 months to build a pay-per-view event. Is that actually true? I don't know. But that was the mark that they always wanted to have the fight done by.
Probably due for a fight like that. We know Fury and
Wilder. Already beyond the three-month point, though, right? So 2 months, I think you're asking for trouble a little, because you don't have enough time to do the real press tour and to market the fight. Because remember, they're going to have to go to the UK, and they're going to come to New York. I mean, maybe that's all they do. How many press conferences are you going to do, really, right?
Yeah.
You know, but they need time to do that and then let the fighters get back into camp and everything. They don't have to make weight, so they have that going for them. But you don't want to get too, you don't want to get into October and be doing a press tour for a fight that's 6 weeks later.
I agree. I do think a press tour is important for a fight like this because they're both – I mean, look, to the hardcore boxing fans, you know them, but the casuals don't. They just don't. I mean – especially if you're asking people to put up $69.95 or whatever it is for a fight like that, you've got to create some visibility there.
And I think the price point is important in this fight, too. Don't do what HBO is doing with the Canelo Triple G rematch. They're charging $85 to watch it in HD. I don't think that they would, but don't do something like that. Price it reasonably because, as you said, most people aren't familiar with these guys. The price is going to be lower in the UK anyway because it always is. It's just significantly lower.
Yep.
So just don't get carried away with the price. You know, make it $65 in HD so people don't say, I'm not spending $80 on this or, you know, whatever other figure they would come up with.
Can we stop saying like $55 for standard def too? Does anybody have standard def anymore?
I used to argue with the PR guys because they would say, oh, well, it's really $55. I said, well, who's watching it in S?
The rabbit ears on the
thing. Can you watch it in SD? Does anyone have an SD television anymore? It's crazy.
I don't think so. All right. So we'll see what happens there. All right. On Saturday night, Danny Garcia, Sean Porter, two of the best 147-pounders in the world, will face off at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. The fight is for the WBC title and perhaps more importantly, a potential big money showdown against either Errol Spence, Keith Thurman, maybe somebody else sometime next year. Looking at these two fighters, we're a couple of days away now, Keith. How do you see this matchup?
I think it's going to be a very, very competitive fight, Chris. That's going to go to the cards, and it's going to be one of those where it's going to be a majority decision or a split decision. I don't see it ending on any other way. I think Danny Garcia is the bigger puncher. I have a hard time seeing him knocking Sean Porter out. But Porter was down against Adrian Broner, who's not as big of a puncher as Danny Garcia, certainly not at welterweight. So, you know, you do have that to factor into it. But I think it's going to be a really close fight. Rounds that are hard to score. The way Sean fights, you know, sometimes it makes what he does effectively hard to give him credit for because you can't see what he's doing sometimes because a lot of it's on the inside. He does a lot of body work on the inside. I think he's a hard guy to score sometimes, which is why a lot of his fights have been, you know, close decisions or he lost a majority decision to Kell Brook and lost a unanimous decision to Keith Thurman. But some people thought that that fight was a draw or that he won. It was a close fight.
Close,
I thought Thurman won, but it was a close fight. Danny Garcia oftentimes is in fights where he's either won split decisions, a couple that he probably didn't deserve. Certainly Mauricio Herrera, I thought, beat him. The Lamont Peterson fight was close, but I did think Danny Garcia won that fight. But the point is that they're always in close fights, and they're such high-level guys. I think we're headed to the cards on Saturday night, and I wouldn't be surprised if we walk away from it with some controversy.
I think the key for Garcia, of course, is how you keep Porter off of you. Maybe Brandon Rios was kind of like a very light warm-up for something like that. Very light. I thought Brandon Rios was more game than I thought he was going to be. He was way better than I thought he was going to be. I was getting knocked out like the second or third round. But Brandon Rios is another guy that likes to just move towards you and it doesn't fight the same exact style or anything like that, but maybe that's a little bit of a warm up for a Sean Porter. But you know, Danny talked about after that fight with Brandon Rios, I was reading some of his quotes last night about his timing, and he was a little rusty, wasn't all the way there timing wise coming off an 11-month layoff following the Thurman fight. He's gonna have to have that timing back against Sean Porter because Sean Porter's gonna come in, he's gonna charge, he's gonna be bull in a china shop. That's just how Sean Porter fights. I'm very interested to see if Danny can time some of those Sean Porter charges. Because if he can, I think he could stop Porter. I think he's got more than enough power to put Porter down. But if he's just spending the entire fight trying to get Porter off him, that's going to play right to Porter's hands.
He can't allow Sean Porter to be in his chest. Yeah. He just can't do it because that's not his fight. He needs to step back and, as you said, counter. And if he does, his left hook is a great weapon for him.
Great power.
His right hand, obviously, he showed that against Brandon Rios. He can hurt you with his
right
hand.
I encourage people
as well
to watch the replay of the Brandon Rios knockout. That right hand. Like, watch, there's a couple of YouTube videos that have it in slow-mo. It's like Brandon Rios gets hit, and then Rios gets hit, and then it's just like...
Yeah, just life comes out of his body a little
gone.
Bit.
No, I know. He got up, but it was...
I'm with you in the fact that I give Brandon Rios a lot of credit. He did fight better against Danny Garcia than most people expected. But just going back to Porter Garcia, he can't let Sean Porter smother him. He just can't. But and the other thing from Porter's perspective, he's coming off a very long layoff, pretty much the same layoff that Danny Garcia was coming off when he fought Brandon Rios. So what will his timing be like in this fight? Is he, in my opinion, toward the end of the fight against Adrian Granados, he didn't look great in the last couple of rounds. I know he hurt his left hand. He said he hurt it in the sixth round. He couldn't use it the way that he wanted to during the second half of the fight. But there was a very weird moment in the 11th round when, I guess it was his hand, but there was a weird break in the action. And the referee, Gary Rosado, kind of gave Sean Porter some time to recover from what he said was an elbow by Adrian Granados. I didn't see it. I watched the replay several times. I didn't really see him hit him with his elbow, but he said that he elbowed him, and it gave Sean Porter maybe 10 seconds or so, and it was pretty early in the round. It was like a minute 10 into the round. I just didn't like Sean Porter's body language, and it was kind of weird. He was complaining to his dad. He kind of like shook his hand a little bit. I'm not saying he was going to quit or anything because I don't think there's quit in Sean Porter. It was just a weird moment in that fight. And I think Adrian Granados, another guy who just comes forward and comes forward and forward like Sean Porter does, I think he was getting to Porter a little bit toward the end of that fight. I don't know if he was tired because he's always in great shape, but there was something off in the final few rounds of that fight. Porter clearly won the fight. But I just thought there was something a little off with him at the end of that fight.
That's interesting. I thought it was his hand at that time because you're right. He is in great shape. That's how Porter wins fights because he's in great shape and he can go 12 rounds battling you, wrestling with you on the inside, frustrating you. Doesn't have great one-punch power, but can make it a fight like that. I thought it was his hand. I'd be interested to see if there's more to it. But I'm also interested to see what Garcia really is right now. I mean, obviously the shine has come off Danny Garcia since the Lucas Matisse fight back in 2013. I mean, at that point, I would say arguably the top two or three welterweight in the world. I mean, when he's, I know Floyd Mayweather is still fighting at that point, but he's up there. He's on the rise in that top five, at least in the welterweight division. Now, when you talk about the premier welterweights, I mean, Garcia is still in that mix, but he's kind of middle of the pack mix at this point. Whereas, we're looking at Crawford, Spence, Thurman as the top, clear top guys in the welterweight division. Do you think, based off what you saw against Rios and I guess what you saw against Thurman, at 30, what do you think Garcia is right now? Has he lost a step in the last couple of years? Or is it just there's just been an overwhelming amount of criticism about the guys that he's fought?
I don't think there's much slippage in him that I've seen, Chris. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot separating him and Keith Thurman 18 months ago. I didn't think. I thought Thurman won the fight, but Danny came on in the second half of that fight, I thought, and I don't really think there's a whole lot separate. Thurman obviously would be ranked – he beat him, so he'd be ranked ahead of him. But I think he's a top five welterweight. It maybe took him longer to get Brandon Rios out of there than people expected, but ultimately he did what he was supposed to do in that fight. And there, with him, there's not a ton of wear and tear on him because he doesn't fight that much. He fought, twice a year, sometimes once a year. It's not like he's had a couple of physical fights, but he hasn't been in these brutal, brutal wars where he's an old 30, I don't think. So I think, and Sean Porter is a little older than him. He's 31. So I think maybe there might be more wear and tear on Porter than him. And not that Porter's been in these knockdown, drag out type of things either, but he's been in some tough fights against, Keith Thurman and Kell Brook is another fight that was difficult for him. So the Granados fight also. Porter got hit a lot in that fight. He's going to have to tighten up his defense against Danny Garcia because he got hit. Adrian Granados is not a big puncher at welterweight. He's really a junior welterweight. But he hit him with some flush right hands, and if Danny Garcia hits him with those type of punches, Sean Porter is going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I agree with that. How do you think the fight ends? What do you got?
I think it's going to be a split decision. And in these cases, although the Thurman fight went the other way, Danny Garcia tends to win these fights, so I'm going to go with Danny Garcia by split decision.
I think Garcia stops him. I think 10th, 11th round, he stops him because I'm glad he got that fight under his belt with Rios, shake some of the rust off. You know, you get back into the flow of things. It goes back to the timing. I think if he can time Sean Porter coming in, I don't think Sean Porter's got great defense by any stretch. I think if he times him, I think he can stop him in the later rounds. I think Sean's going to be in great shape. I think Sean's going to put a good fight on. I think both these guys, whoever wins, is not going to be ready to fight again for like 6 months because whenever you fight Sean Porter, it's like you're in a car crash.
Absolutely. It's wild.
But I think Garcia...
And maybe, Chris, this is... If he beats Sean Porter, particularly if he stops him, people need to start giving Danny Garcia some credit.
Yeah.
Because this guy, I thought he lost to Mauricio Herrera. Mm. The Lamont Peterson fight was closer maybe than people thought it should have been at that point in Lamont Peterson's career. But Danny Garcia has some very good wins on his record. And he's only lost, technically, he's only lost one time in a fight that was very close to an undefeated guy who people thought at the time was the number one welterweight in the world, excluding Floyd Mayweather.
Right. No, I agree. I agree. He wins this fight. He sets himself up to reestablish himself as potentially number one in 147 pounds. All right, let's finish with Manny Pacquiao. In July, Pacquiao returned to the ring, stopped Lucas Matisse. That fight not only kept Pacquiao's career going, but also reestablished him as, I would say, the money man in the 147-pound division. Since then, Pacquiao has declared himself a free agent. He and or his people have met with Top Rank, they've met with DAZN, DAZN being Eddie Hearn. I assume someone in his camp has talked to Al Heyman at some point. I don't know who that might be. But as Pacquiao moves forward and he's trying to decide who he's going to work with, what do you think? Who should Pacquiao work with moving forward?
Pacquiao should work with whoever is going to pay him the most. He's 39 years old. He's one of the rare boxers that most mainstream sports fans I think if you say the name Manny Pacquiao to people, they know who he is. And that's not the case for virtually every other boxer. So he needs to maximize what he's put into his career at 39 years old. So whether it's Eddie Hearn that's going to pay him a lot to fight Amir Khan, or Bob Arum's going to pay him the most to fight Terrence Crawford. Yeah, that's a terrible fight for him, I think. But whoever's going to pay him the most, I think that's what he needs to do. Because despite the amount of money that he made against Floyd Mayweather, Manny Pacquiao is a very generous guy. He donates a lot of money in the Philippines. I'm not in his books. I have no idea how much money Manny Pacquiao has. I don't suspect that it's as much as what he should have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. I think he's he's one of those guys that based on how his career and life have gone, you can easily envision him having massive money problems 5-10 years after his career is over. I agree with you. Go to whoever can pay you the most money. I think he should take kind of the Miguel Cotto approach to his career and do basically one-offs. Don't sign a long-term deal with a promoter. But my first fight, would be with Eddie Hearn because Eddie Hearn's got Amir Khan. And I think Amir Khan, you and I have talked about this before, Amir Khan is the biggest money, most winnable fight for Manny Pacquiao. Even if he loses, I don't think he gets hurt. You mentioned Crawford. I think he gets hurt against Terrence Crawford. I think his career ends with Terrence Crawford. If it's one of the PBC guys, I think he's got a decent chance against a few of them. I don't think he beats Errol Spence. Could he beat the winner of Garcia Porter? Maybe. Whether it's Mikey Garcia out there, I don't think he wins a Mikey Garcia fight, but that's interesting. But I think a Khan fight, because first of all, you can do it in the UK. And, even we've heard Bob Arum in recent weeks talk about how, he went from publicly saying stuff like, yeah, we can fix the tax situation, to I'm not so sure if we can fix the tax situation. So he's going to have to fight overseas, most likely. And if you are, Khan represents a massive fight in the UK. We talked about, a stadium fight between, Joshua and Fury. Pacquiao versus Khan is also a stadium fight. Maybe not as big as Joshua Fury, but it's a massive stadium fight that could net Manny Pacquiao a major payday. So if I'm Pacquiao, whoever is really representing, which I don't know either, I don't know who is speaking for him out there with any sort of authority. If I'm Pacquiao, I go and cut a deal with Eddie for one fight to do Amir Khan at some point early next year.
Yeah, I think that the Amir Khan fight provides the greatest risk-reward ratio for Manny Pacquiao, right? He's going to make a lot of money, and as you said, he's not going to get hurt. Terrence Crawford stops Manny Pacquiao, beats him up. Errol Spence does the same thing. He's way too big for Manny Pacquiao and too strong. Maybe not as complete a fighter as Terrence Crawford, but just too big and strong for him. So there's fights where he could get hurt, and he's not going to make as much money. Mm-hmm. Like you said, Chris, that's a huge fight. It's a stadium fight in the UK, And Khan is, you know, still a star there. I mean, he's not as big as Anthony Joshua or anything, but he's still a big star over there. And the UK fans will view that as a fight that he can win also, because Pacquiao will be pushing 40 years. He'll be 40 years old in December. So, but I think that's the route that he really should go.
Mm. Pacquiao Khan, who would you favor in a fight like that? Because I'm not going to learn anything from Khan and Samuel Vargas. Like, I'm not going to learn anything from that.
No, just like we didn't learn against Phil LaGreco.
I might learn more than against Phil LaGreco, who was just, I don't know what he was there for. Like, just there to collect a check and walk out.
He talked a lot of trash before that fight to get blown out in 39 seconds, for sure.
I mean, he was one step above Curtis Harper.
At least he stayed in the ring for half a round or whatever, you know?
Less than that.
But, yeah, so I would go with Pacquiao. Just Amir Khan clearly could outbox Manny Pacquiao. He's a better boxer overall. He's still fast. He's only 31 years old. He's much younger than Pacquiao. But his chin is suspect, and the last thing to go for fighters, obviously, is power. Pacquiao still has some power. I think he showed that somewhat against Lucas Matisse, although I think that fight was more of a byproduct of where Lucas Matisse is than where Manny Pacquiao is. But I still think Pacquiao would stop him in that fight.
By the way, what did you think of the Curtis Harper incident, walking out of the ring in Minnesota and declaring afterwards he wasn't getting paid enough for a fight like that?
Well, the craziest thing was he said, well, now they're going to have to pay me. I said, what is this guy talking about? Like, he said,
there's a clamor for that? Was there a clamor for, like, Oliver McCall, Lennox Lewis after the McCall?
Like, pay you. I'm like, this is going to cost you money. You're going to get suspended.
Yes.
He should be suspended.
Yes.
Because signed a contract and walked out of the ring. I was actually watching it live. And I was talking to my boss on the phone, and we're like, this is, you know, FA is just going to knock him out in the first round, and that, you know, that's going to be nothing. I was actually writing it off TV for the website, but it turned out to be the biggest story of the night by far, something none of us have ever seen. The guy walked, I looked, I was like, is he hurt? I'm like, what is this guy doing? And he just walked out, and he did it like he was totally confident that he was doing the right thing, and it's career suicide. Not that he was going to make a lot of money in boxing to begin with, but who would book him for a fight at this point?
Look,
and he should be suspended and fined.
I think it takes a special kind of crazy to be these sacrificial lambs to monster punchers like Efe. But don't sign the contract then. Don't get in the ring. If you don't like the money, nobody's forcing you. It's not, you know, it's not Gladiator. You don't have to go out there and fight this guy. Don't get into the ring against him. There's no clamor for his name. I will remember for a long time if that counts to him.
In infamy,
but,
for sure.
Yeah, but I don't think there's any kind of clamor. I do like that you know, it gave Schaefer a chance to just, my guy's the most feared boxer, heavyweight in the world. Like, this is what a fighter actually left the ring against him. Right. He spun that narrative immediately afterwards.
He did, but Curtis Harper got something over on them, at least, in that he ruined his perfect record. He was 5-0 with 5 knockouts. Now he's 6-0 with 5 knockouts. So, for whatever that's worth. But again, it was career suicide for him. One of the strangest things I've ever seen in boxing. But the look on Efe's face too, when he's like, "What is this guy doing?" Like, what, you know? And the referee is kind of looking around like no one's ever seen that.
It is, look, in a weird way. Like you said, like, if Efe had just stopped Harper, maybe you don't even write about it. Maybe it's just like, it's not even, it's just like a couple of lines, you know.
On Boxing Scene, we would have written about it because that's our,
all right, well, I mean, but you would, but it wouldn't have got any traffic.
No, absolutely not. No one would have cared.
Nobody would have cared. Now, you know, to some of the more casual fans that picked up on this story, and even myself, who's somewhere in between, I want to see Efe fight again. Like, if this guy's walking out of the ring because he says he thinks he's not getting paid enough to get his head caved in by this heavyweight prospect, you know, Efe, I think he doesn't get the knock on his resume, but I think he actually gains more by this guy doing that than if he had just stopped him in two rounds.
Yeah, it does something for his reputation, and it did for an unfortunate negative reason. People did know about it because a lot of my friends don't care about boxing at all, and they all saw that on SportsCenter, and they're texting me or crying, what happened? You know, so it wasn't positive attention for the sport, but it did make people take notice, and it is something that we've never seen before. But just what you said before, Chris, is once you sign the contract, if it's for $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000, what was he expecting to get for that? What is he going to get, $20,000 to get knocked out? He's an opponent.
Yeah.
That's his job. And if he doesn't like that job, then don't sign up to do it.
I know you would have written about the knockout. I mean, it would have been brilliant prose on.
I didn't say that.
Keith, always great to have you in here doing the podcast. Thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks for having me, man.
All right, joining me now on the podcast, the former welterweight champion. He's going to try to get his belt back on Saturday night against Sean Porter at the Barclays Center on Showtime. Is Danny Garcia. Danny, thanks for joining me, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
How much does it bother you to the former in front of the world champion still?
I never thought about that. You know, to me, I'm always gonna be a world champion. So, and that's how I think about it. I'm a championship level fighter, and that's my mindset, and that's how it's always gonna be.
How long did it take you to get over that first loss?
I'll never get over it. Mm-hmm. I'll never get over it. But it's in the past, so it is what it is.
Do you think that if you had won that fight, that you wouldn't have taken that amount of time off the 11 months, or was that a result of needing a break?
I think I was going to take it regardless. That was my plan. Mm-hmm. My plan was, you know, unify the division, take a little break, and come back stronger.
Mm-hmm. What'd you do? What does a boxer that one needs a break do during 11 months off?
I'm not going to lie, it felt good. You know, it's a lot of hard work in this game. It's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of mental stress, mental, physical stress, especially when we've been doing it for 20 years. So it felt good. I just did regular stuff, you know, hanging out with my daughter, hung out with my friends, you know, spent a lot of time in Florida near the beach. And that was basically it. I didn't really do nothing else, nothing more.
Was there a point during that time when you started to get that itch to say, like, all right, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on in the boxing world. I want to get back into that mix. Was there a moment that felt like that for you?
Absolutely. When I just woke up one day, plus I was my first time ever coming off a loss. It was like, it was on my back for so long. You know what I mean? For years. Can you imagine that? So... yeah, it was hard. That was the hardest thing about it. So I just went there and get that dead weight off my back. And I did it, and I'm already back again. So time flies.
Did your dad think you needed that break? Did he recognize kind of where you were with your life, that you needed to take some time off?
He always wants me to fight, you know. So he wanted me to fight like 2 months later.
So short answer is no.
It's like, no. He's boxing. But, you know, it's my first time being a dad. You know, it was a lot of first times for me at that time. So I feel like I needed it. I was adjusting to other things in my life besides just boxing. So that year gave me the chance to, like, mold me into my new lifestyle.
You were, you know, around the 2013 time, you were the guy that was going to fight anybody. I remember going down there to do the Sports Illustrated story on you, and you were just fearless. You were the guy, you know, your fourth or fifth professional fight, you would take on veterans, you were taking on anybody. And then it seems like the perception, what people said about you changed. Like, when is Danny Garcia going to fight somebody? What was that like for you?
I didn't understand, because I was fighting everybody. It's like, who else can you... When I had 140, I fought everybody. You know what I mean? I fought every single body at the weight class. I think the only person I didn't fight was Tim Bradley. That's the only person I didn't fight. I remember I had this Ring magazine, and I was ranked number 10 at that time at 140. And I looked at the rankings, and I fought like 7 people on there, on the rankings at 140. And then I think they just say that because of that one fight, that one Rosago fight where it was like easy, you know, I knocked him out. But every champion deserves a fight like that after so much big fights, you know what I mean? So that was it. And, you know, when you win, and people don't, you know, a lot of people criticize it, they hate it, they want you to lose, so... That was a combination of that, so I know how that worked. And look, at 147, I'm already fighting. This is my fourth or fifth fight, and I'm already fighting, you know, another great champion.
Is it at all, I don't know what, you know, fighters get motivated by a bunch of different things, but for you, when you hear people talk about the top of the division, they say Crawford, Spence, Thurman, does it motivate you that they seemingly forgot? You've only got the one loss in your resume, and no matter what people thought about it, it was really close one way or the other. Does that motivate you at all?
I try not to worry about other fighters. I try to stay in my own lane and do my own thing. I never been worried about, you know, who they think is the best, because I know what I could do. Mm-hmm. And I know how boxing is. In 6 months, 7 months, one more year, it's going to be somebody else, a new guy, that they're going to be worried about today. So that's just how it is, man. It's just how it is. This is how the game works. So I can't be mad at it.
What did turning 30 mean to you?
I got my first gray hair.
Yeah, I remember that, man. I got 40 around the corner, so come on, I hear you.
I got one gray hair, so I don't know. When I look in the mirror, am I older? Like, do I look older? I just be looking, you know what I mean? Like, mental stuff. Am I older? Like, Do I still look the same? So, oh, I'm wearing the body, just looking old. I ain't worried about nothing. I'm cool.
Did it make you think of your career any differently? Like, all right, I'm 30 now. Maybe I want to, maybe any urgency to do different things or try?
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah. In boxing, yeah, it was different for me because, you know, my regular life, I was thinking like, oh, snap, I'm 30s. Like, when I think 30s, like, oh, that's old. But in boxing, I'm in the prime of my career. Mm-hmm. You know, I faced everyone. I faced a lot of great champions. This is like my 9th or 10th world title fight. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm seasoned. You know, this is the perfect time. You know, I know how to fight without getting hit as much and still take risks. So, yeah, I'm definitely in the prime of my career where I'm a lot smarter.
That's interesting. What is the difference? Like, say, you know, a lot of people early on knew your name for the Amir Khan fight, the knockout in that fight. What's the difference between that Danny Garcia and the one we're going to see fighting Saturday?
I would say I'm a lot smarter. You know, I'm a lot sharper now. I'm more of a seasoned boxer right there. I was just fighting off. I've always been skilled, but that fight I was just fighting off pure hunger because mm-hmm. I wanted to show everybody, like, you know, I'm the new guy and mm-hmm. like. And I still feel the same way, but I'm just smarter now. Mm-hmm. So it's like I don't have to take unnecessary risks because I know how to get the job done.
Mm-hmm. There's going to be a lot of dates available for a guy like you now. They just announced the Fox deal, the Showtime deal. So there's a lot of opportunity. What's your mindset over the next few years? You know, not to look far ahead, but what is your thought process there?
Get this money and get out.
do you have like a clock in your career? Like, I don't want to be fighting past 35. I don't want to be fighting past.
Oh, no. It depends. I don't know. I can't see myself fighting at 35. Mm-hmm. No.
What do you want to be doing
especially
at 35?
With the new deal.
You need a lot of money.
So, you know, probably got 3 years, maybe.
What do you want to be doing at 35?
35? I want to have more kids. Mm-hmm. I want to have more kids, have a bigger family. Mm-hmm. I only have one child right now because I'm still in my career, and I know that put a lot, like, it was different for me. Mm-hmm. So I know that in order to have more kids, I don't think I could be able to box at the same mm-hmm. time.
When you told your dad you're ready to get back last year, was there kind of that rocky moment with his turn? Like, what are we waiting for? Like, ready to go, or was?
So we. You know, I talked to my manager, and he said, you ready to get back in there? I said, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. And then that's how it happened. I remember the first couple weeks of training camp was, like, so hard for me, though. Because when you're off for a year and you get back in there, you mm-hmm. forget how hard it is. So I remember that was hard for me. And then I finally broke through and peaked and all that stuff. So,
did you disconnect completely from boxing? I mean, you say getting back in that camp. I mean, did you, when you were trying to take time off, were you just completely out of it and trying to stay out of it?
Yeah, I only watched a few fights. Mm-hmm. I remember the fights I watched. I watched Daniel Jacobs and Triple G. I remember we watched that. We was in Miami. And then, I think that's the only fight I watched. To be honest with you, I didn't really care about boxing at that time.
You talked after the Rios fight about, you know, kind of your timing maybe a little bit off in that fight.
Yeah.
In the last few months, do you think you've gotten that back? I mean, what are you expecting from that perspective when you fight?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I feel a lot sharper, a lot stronger. I feel good. I feel like Danny Garcia. Mm-hmm.
Do you like Sean Porter?
I don't know him personally. I mean, you know, I respect him and his dad because I know how hard he could be. You know what I mean? And I know him from the amateurs, so they came a long way. Just like I came a long way, so I respect that. But I don't know him personally, so personally I don't care about him. And he's my rival, so gotta destroy the enemy.
How do you prepare for a fighter like that? Because it seems like every time somebody fights a Sean Porter, it looks like they got in a car crash afterwards. He just is head on, coming straight for you, trying to wrestle with you. I mean, how do you? Is there any difference in preparation for a fighter that fights like that?
We just gotta stay disciplined. You gotta stay disciplined, fight a good fight, let them know we in the house. That's it. And fight each round with the same momentum, same game plan. Mm-hmm.
Your dad ready to ratchet up the rhetoric once again, the talk? Is he ready to, is he in mid-season form for this event?
Yeah, he's always ready. But the problem with him is you just never know when he's going to turn it on or when he's going to turn it off. So it's just waiting for somebody to ask him a dumb question.
There's plenty of them. Yeah. I asked you this when I was down doing the SI piece, and I'll ask you here again. Like, how is it – how do you separate the father-son relationship and the father-trainer relationship with someone as intense as your dad is?
You can't.
It all blends together.
You can't separate it. Mm-hmm. I don't care what fighter and son tells you they can. You can't. Mm-hmm. He's your dad. So you just got to go with the. You just got to go with the motion, and you just got to fix the problems as you go on. That's it.
Well, Danny, always appreciate your time, man. Good luck on Saturday, and glad to have you back in the mix, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek and Danny Garcia for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.